I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today, I'm very excited to welcome back to the podcast Michelle Van Loon. Michelle is a longtime friend. She is a writer friend, regular friend too, whatever that all means. She's a regular friend and a writer friend, because those friends can't be regular friends, whatever. All right. I will say this, that Michelle's most recent book, at least the one that's out there and for sale currently, is Moments and Days, and you can find that at anitalustria.com. You'll see that right there on the homepage of the podcast, of the website. But Michelle is kind of snickering and laughing in the background, because Michelle, what you've written, I don't know, how five, six books? You've got one in the works that will release this year that I'm super excited about. So answer my first question. Well, wait. Welcome. Number one, welcome. How many books? And what's the new one coming out in later this year?
The new one. I write a lot because I obviously have a lot to say all the time. But the book that's coming out this summer, I'm very excited about. It's called Born to Wander, Recovering the Value of Our Pilgrim Identity.
Love the title. I'm super excited. Say more about it.
It focuses on themes of exile and pilgrimage through scripture and in our lives in a very unpredictable way, in a challenging way. So I'm excited. I'll have more to say about it as we get closer to the release date, but good. Today we just get to hang out and talk.
We do. You're exactly right. You know, one of the things I like about you, you're an extrovert, you're a writer, but you're also a talker. And sometimes I don't think those two go together, because I'm a talker and I struggle more to write, but you managed to put the two together. How do you do it?
I'm waiting to hit the bottom of where there's nothing more to say.
But you put those thoughts, down to paper. Like, I have to talk it all out first. Maybe you do too. I don't know. I think you work it all out writing it first, though. Which way do you do it?
It's true. I write so that I know what I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I talk in order to kind of gather my thoughts. And I'm grateful that those things work together. My strength is in the area of verbal communication. Don't ask me to balance your checkbook.
I won't. Okay, very good.
Really bad. It's a very lopsided skill set.
Okay, very interesting. I think that's fascinating. And I think I wanted you to say all that too, because I think there are people listening that always wonder about the writing life, and it looks very different for different people. I think we have these stereotypes of the quiet, introverted writer that's a hermit and, you know, all that.
Lots of them are.
Well, this is true. We know some, but this is, but they aren't all like that. No. That's great. Well, we have a variety of topics today. You might even say, for those who joined me in my past life with a Midday Connection, this might be a little Milrose-ish. As we kind of bounce from to a couple of different topics, depending on how long and how deep we go with some of them. But before we get there, I just want to read a couple of emails that have come in and remind people of the email address. So grateful. A couple of folks emailed and said, long story. What's nice is when people give a gift via PayPal, they can also send an email along with it, which is always nice. So I got two for the price of one here, which was nice. So one friend said, been wanting to do this for a while, just listened to episode 113 for the second time. And so that's always fun to hear as well. And she goes on to say, we have some things in common. I need to use fewer words. People at work say I write these, you know, and they named her these notes that they name her notes, like it would be Anita notes, because they're really wordy. And my word for 2018, she says, is also presence, being present. Mm-hmm. And she said, I picked it before I heard you say it. Love the podcast. Keep them going. Another friend said, I've been listening to you for a number of years, started with Midday Connection on the recommendation of a cousin, stayed because the show gave me role models of women who are serious about their faith and were not afraid to think deeply, and your podcast has become a constant companion when I work in the yard or around the house. P.S., I love your new tagline, keep the conversation going. So thanks for that, because you always wonder when you, you know, shift or change something if people like it or not. So I've heard that from a few people. Thanks for that. And if you want to email and let me know what you're thinking or respond to a conversation with some of your thoughts, I love it when that happens. You can email me at faithconvo@gmail.com. faithconvo@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. And I know some people don't want their comments read. Just tell me that and I will not, or I can keep you anonymous, all that. And again, thanks to those who have given over the course of the year end and beginning of this year. I've had a number of gifts come in to Faith Conversations, and it's easy to give at PayPal. The email address to use is producer@anitalustria.com, producer@anitalustria.com. And snail mail, U.S. Postal Service, you can mail it to 8 White Oak Terrace, Sarasota, Florida, 34237. All right. Commercial over. So Michelle, you gave me a number of topics. You're always thinking and writing. And one of the topics I want to start with, you've been working on a project. I don't know if it's out there in article form yet, but you're working on something, and I thought it might be good for us to talk about this. So I'll let you kind of open up and share about this topic that focuses in on people who have left the church and how they come back after a painful experience.
Yes. I've written a lot on my blog, various other blogs over the years about spiritual abuse, about bad practices in church. And I've wondered more and more about, for those of us who stay, for those of us who decide to kind of work through it and not completely disconnect, how are we to be welcomers and healers for those that we know that may be in the church, that may be hovering near the exit door, that may be on the outside, people that we used to go to church with? We've all got long lists, I'm sure. Everybody listening, if you are in the church still, you probably know a lot of people that once were with you and no longer are. Maybe their faith in Jesus is intact but battered, or maybe they've discarded what they once held entirely and are trying to figure out who they are now. The question isn't what to do about them, but I've wrestled more and more with how to coach others. How are we supposed to be? Who are we supposed to be in order to make a home for them, keep relationships going, and strengthen those relationships, no matter where they go to church.
I think what's interesting too, I think about this, this also looks a little bit different, not in what we're going to talk about and how we work at strengthening those relationships, but it can look different in a large church versus a smaller church from this standpoint. In a larger church, it's easier for someone to slip through the cracks and to move to the edges and hence move out the door with fewer and sometimes no people noticing, which is also heartbreaking. In a smaller church, you see the whole a little bit more quickly or easily, hopefully. But I'm always amazed at the choices of people to not do anything or say anything, or to allow people to kind of move out the door without talking to them or to anyone in leadership or doing anything about it themselves. Because I think we have this sense that we're not responsible, that, oh, that's someone in leadership's job.
Yes. Well, and a lot of times, even those in leadership tend to pass the buck, that I didn't really know them. Maybe their small group leader or the people in their Bible study, you know, they had better connection with them. And really, at the heart of it, I think it all feels like confrontation, uncomfortable confrontation. And who likes that?
Yes, exactly. Well, there's that fear of asking why you've moved to the margins and or out the door. And that's that confrontational piece. It feels like confrontation. We also don't want to really know the why sometimes.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah. Exactly. I think most of my experience, my husband and I have been in church leadership in various settings over the years, and also just been the regular people in the pew, so to speak, although none of the churches we went to ever had pews. But to use a shorthand, you know, we've been on both sides, and the difficulty, it's easy to make assumptions about why people left, to fill in the blanks for them, and therefore to avoid those conversations. And it also means, if we're doing it well, that we have to look in the mirror and begin to try to name what our part in the situation is. Even if I was someone's friend and they left, well, it reflects, at least initially, on the institution or the organization or the body that we both were a part of. Can that relationship transcend the fact that we were spiritual co-workers, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's not, I mean, it's very dissimilar in some ways, but I think about that when someone leaves a job, you know, by choice or not, doesn't matter. But what held that relationship together? And, you know, I think there's a whole lot to think about there. And how do we value people? Are relationships circumstantial only, or how do we maintain when circumstances change? And I think sometimes there are also people that need/want, I don't know which word is correct here, to test that because of personality. There are plenty of other reasons why people move toward the exit door, but the bigger question is, maybe it's not the why of that, but what do we do as a group, as a body? How do we look at those people that are moving toward the door, and how do we, in a mature manner, deal with that? What in your experience, and you have seen people move outside and away, but you have also been ones who have had to make that move in your past too, I think. And so you kind of know it from both sides.
Yes, yes. And there were times, you know, in a difficult church setting, it's like a bad breakup or even a divorce, depending on how long you've been in that relationship. Not entirely. It doesn't map point for point. But if a church implodes, splits, or closes, maybe you have to pick a side and relationships are severed. Or maybe the whole thing just fries you out emotionally and spiritually, and you're not sure who to trust anymore. So those, we're all out there. We've all been there. I've been there. And I think that the place to begin is by doing some good, hard self-examination. No matter what, we are in a moment right now in our church culture, in the broader church culture. The church is shrinking in most segments of our population. We're seeing politics add a whole other layer of frustration and tension for people. Mm-hmm. And And we're in a time right now where people are talking about abuse, and it's not just Me Too, it's hashtag Church Too. If you're a Twitter person and you jump on Twitter and just look, you will see that language, you know, and those hurts. So to pretend that it's all on the lever and that there's just something wrong or deficient in their faith is sadly a reflection of immaturity on the blamer's part.
Yeah.
You know, if someone leaves, it is an opportunity to begin by having a good hard look in the mirror and to recognize what has been lost. Someone's gifts went out the door. Someone's experience went out the door. Someone's wisdom went out the door. Someone's brokenness went out the door. And now it's maybe even a little bit more broken. Mm.
And I think, you know, you can't just be one person reflecting on this. This has to be a bit of a corporate conversation.
Yes. I mean, yes, it does.
Right. I mean, it starts with the individual, but this needs to be a cultural awakening or cultural shift maybe for some churches who have not done a good job. And I would maybe even say most churches. I think we struggle with this. I think it's very easy for people to start moving to the margins. And it's like the frog in the kettle for both for those of us that are regularly involved, not moving toward the margins. We don't realize sometimes the person moving toward the margins because it is ever so incremental and it doesn't seem like anything that raises red flags. So sometimes, you know, I'll throw that out there too. I think it takes some time for us to figure out that this is happening or has happened.
I would love to see it become a regular practice among church and ministry leaders, even if they have to put it in their schedule of things to talk about quarterly or a couple of times a year, to be able to say who has left, who's pursued them, why have they left. And I get that if a leader pursues someone, it feels to a lever like there's an agenda to come back, you know, to be a part. What can we do to fix this? You know, or is there something that you need to fix, lever? You know, and so sometimes the best emissaries and carers in that situation aren't leaders, but they're just the other people that you are going to church with, that you're worshiping with, that you're in a Bible study with.
Yes.
Just because the agenda that, you know, it drops from a DEFCON code orange kind of crisis into just a you know, based on relationship. If you as the stayer, as the person who's stuck with the church, can make sure that you're leaving your agenda at the door, not that somebody who's hurt and who's left isn't going to be feeling it.
Sure.
But you do a great service by saying, I'm not here to sell you on this church. I'm not even here to sell you on your next church. Hmm. I'm just here because I care. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to go forward in our friendship.
Okay, let me raise this. And I don't know if this is in direct proportion to the kind of church, whether we actually follow someone, you know, connect with someone that we've seen has left. But when we choose to do that, it can be messy. And we, you know, again, this goes back to the confrontational piece. Sometimes I wonder if our small groups or our Bible studies, if there's not enough time to really connect on a personal level. Some of them are very rigid, and we start right into the study and we actually never get to know the person. And so to begin with, there's not this sense of interrelating on a deeper personal level to know the joys and hurts of individuals And to start that, as they're, we find that they've left, to start that kind of conversation then is a little too late, I sometimes feel.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right, Anita. We have created cultures of that are very task-oriented.
Yes.
They're very org chart structured. And so there isn't room. If you have a mess in your life that doesn't fit into those slots, then you learn to just keep it kind of off to the side, mm-hmm. siloed away from body life, which isn't body life. And it gets complicated when we use the language that we're a church family, that we're brothers and sisters. We use this super intense language, which
yes,
just complicates this conversation so much.
Thank you for saying that. People can't see me because it's a podcast, but I'm sticking my finger down my throat. That's what Michelle was sort of laughing at. Like
I can see you.
Yeah, and that's a great point. The language we use does not match up with the actions we decide to pursue or use. Right.
We are in a moment, as I said before, where we're having a bit of a reckoning in the church,
mm-hmm.
and we cannot go back to this is the regularly scheduled program, and we're just going to go back to doing what we did before because it's not working,
mm-hmm.
and people are leaving, and people are leaving with lots of hurt and lots of baggage.
And I think one of the other really important points here is, as the pursuer, you know, if we do notice this and decide to pursue someone who has left,
mm-hmm.
we cannot be the primary talker in things.
Yeah.
We've got to sit there with the person and really listen.
It also helps to be able to be honest that we've struggled as well. You know, one reason that so many people, and I have a feeling it's the exact same thing for you, Anita, one reason that people have told me their stories, and I hear from people all over the place because I write regularly.
Yes.
I go first. You know, I will share the mess and the hurt and the confusion. And the times when I've sat on the sidelines, mm-hmm. and the times when the exit is very appealing, and I may be there in body, but my soul is either in the forest preserve taking a walk, or in the grocery store in the frozen food aisle, or somewhere
yes,
anywhere else, but you know where my body is sitting in a church mm-hmm. service.
Yeah,
and because I'm willing to say this is hard, and I'm not necessarily super quick at the glib answer, the fix it all Bible verse,
yep.
the, you know, the quoting from Hebrews 10 of, you know, forsake not in King James English, the gathering together, you know, otherwise something terrible is going to happen. Those glib answers, don't work.
Yes.
They don't work for me, and they certainly don't work for somebody that is hurting.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, bottom line, I mean, there is no way to wrap this conversation, this topic up in any kind of a neat little bow on top, because that's not how this works. That's how we want life to work. That
yes.
is not how this works at all. And if most of us are, you know, really have a little shred of authenticity in us, we know that's mm-hmm. not how our lives work in general, and we can't expect that with others. And so this may be a lengthier, likely will be a lengthier process, and you've got to kind of get in it and stay in it. Yeah.
One Bible verse and some pixie dust will not fix,
mm-hmm.
you know, the wounds and the confusion.
Mm-hmm.
But recognition that you have to change. The church culture is changing. It needs to change because it's not working. And it's a great invitation from God to begin doing something else, to do the self-reflection, to do the good, hard analysis, and to recognize that we're in a period of ongoing grief. And so all of the emotions that go with grieving, the disorientation, the anger, the confusion, all of those things apply here, and they apply individually and corporately. So, I hope a few listeners may write in to you and share their experiences, whether they're leavers or stayers, and how they're navigating these choppy waters we're in.
I would love that. Love to hear from people. And I think the other piece, or an additional piece, maybe it's sort of assumed in what we've said here, but sometimes I think we're not always even aware of how we get into relationship or go a little deeper, because we all have some personal agenda. But when you're walking with someone who has made a choice to leave, I think it's really important to make note that if they do not choose to come back, that's not a good reason to abandon the relationship. That was,
amen.
Right. So I think that needs to be said, because often, I'll follow up and et cetera, et cetera. And of course they will come back. No, you cannot even be thinking, of course they will come back. They may not. They also cannot be a notch on someone's belt.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Preach it, Anita.
Yeah. And I think that also speaks to how we view relationships in the West. Mm-hmm. As something, I don't even know how to word it, something to attain, something to and I think in the church, even back in the day when you heard much more talk about, depending on the church, about evangelism, again, it was kind of that notch on the belt mentality.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to create this relationship so as to share my faith in Christ, and when this person, you know, says yes to Jesus, whoops, check it off, notch in the belt, and now I don't have to relate to them anymore. What's wrong with that picture?
It's a very materialistic way of, transactional way of navigating a life.
That's it. You've said it.
So the people who are at the margins, who I might mention were Jesus's, you know, special focus of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can use the word favorite, I'm only using it. We're all his favorites in one way, but those were the people that he lavished himself on. And we are really bad at modeling that.
Yes.
You know, if there's something in it for us, if there's some way to mark success or acquire a social rung up, that's, we'll grab it unless we're examining ourselves and intentionally trying to be the opposite. So,
well, and I think honestly, this leads into the next thing I want to talk about. You brought to my attention this article that was in USA Today, last week, maybe this past week. This was amazing. So Britain just hired a, quote, minister of loneliness, end quote.
Yes.
That, I mean, I'm still, my jaw is still on the ground. I'm still picking my jaw up. Number one, that there's that realization and understanding that this is something that's epidemic in society, in that, you know, at least Britain is recognizing this. I would posit that that's also epidemic here in the United States, and my guess is in some other cultures that are specifically more westernized. I can't speak to other societies, but let's talk about this. What does that say about a country who would make that choice? Number one, I think that's pretty amazing. What do you think?
Yes, I agree. And it is ironic that these two topics, when I was throwing topics at the wall, that these two topics bubbled up. They are not unconnected.
Right.
But they're connected in ways that are maybe not the first thing that would come to mind, which the glib answer would be, oh, but we, the church, are all the people that are, that have that task to be ministers to the lonely. Let's skip that. Let's just skip over that and go a little deeper.
Yeah, thank you.
I admire Theresa May for acknowledging that people are hurting, people are suffering. I think specifically, there's been so much cut in government funding in the UK for things like libraries and daycare centers, the article mentioned.
Yes.
Some of these places where the marginalized and the alone found places of connection and care at some level, as funding has been cut for those things, there, nothing has filled the gap. Nothing, you know, so there's a, they recognize there's a lot of people hurting, and the person they appointed to this task, this minister of loneliness, I think is going to be working more with the social structures
right.
to see what she can do to kind of reboot that.
Right. Which I understand, but that's a need. And I think, you know, important wherever, because these services are being cut here in the United States as well and other places. So you understand that. But I think this is one of those things, though, for the church, again, the body of Christ, to sit up and take notice if we haven't already, because it, again, does speak to how we interact with one another, how we choose or don't choose to interact with one another.
That's exactly right. One of the interesting things, normally when you hear the phrase minister of loneliness, or I shouldn't say you, when I hear those words, I think of a senior that is sitting alone in an apartment, you know, eating a very meager meal. But their concern, or kind of the thing that seemed to prompt this, was actually young adults that are being self-radicalized toward fundamentalist terrorist kinds of activities. Now, we normally, that wouldn't have been the first, second, or fifth thing that would have come to my mind on my first read-through of that article. But it struck me that those, you know, young people that are feel like they're on the outside looking in, that their culture clashes with the predominant culture around them, that they're trying super hard to find their place, but, you know, people are afraid of them because they're from a different country, or they
Or there are too many tattoos. I mean, I also equate this to joining gangs, you know.
Right, exactly.
Some urban issues, yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, loneliness doesn't fit with just that demographic of an elderly person or maybe a single mom who's, you know, down on her luck or something like that. This is another take a good hard look in the mirror kind of thing, and then look right around you, because we are all lonely. I've struggled with loneliness myself. I have chronic illness, and that illness sometimes takes me out of it, and for an extrovert, this is like triple amounts of torture.
Yes, absolutely.
It takes me out of being able to engage with people, and I can't even necessarily be around a lot of people because I don't have a functioning immune system. So I'm tasting that kind of social isolation, and it does not taste good. So
yeah.
I think that's why this article struck me.
Yes. Well, and I also, a couple of things. I think it's become a little bit more apparent to me lately, partly because of the move. I've talked about that here on the podcast. That's old news. We've been in Sarasota over a year now. But feeling that sense of disconnection because of making a move, but also watching my dad go into a nursing home and talking with my mom, who is there visiting him daily. So she's there much more than I am. And hearing her talk about others, though, that are in the nursing home that that don't have anyone coming by to see them at all. And some you can probably figure out that their families don't live in the area, and maybe she might see them a couple of times a year on major holidays. But it raises all kinds of questions. What their network was like before, did other people let that go, or how did that work? So I think watching my dad and his life being in a nursing home is one thing that elevated this conversation. And then another thing, Mike and I live in a 55 plus community, which might not have been our choice, but it's really definitely where God planted us. We see that for sure now. But he told me one day there was a woman walking walking our street, probably just doing a big walk in the community. And he said hi and said, "How are you?" He told me later, he goes, "I've never seen her before." And so to "How are you?" she responded, "I'm very lonely." And I mean, it caught him so off guard. I said, "What did you say?" And he goes, "I said nothing. I said, oh, I'm so sorry." He said that. But that was it. And, and away she went. And so, yes. So we're realizing that there are many people in a community like this that were either one, single, never married, or have lost their spouse and are living alone, who do not get out to events or who do not choose to engage in the wider community, even outside the walls of our community here. And so what do you do about that? And our next door neighbors and us have met and started talking about that, and what could this community be? And this is not a church at all. Mm-hmm. That's why, partly why I love this article as well. They're not talking to churches. This is just broader social isolation that we're seeing all over the place.
Yeah.
And how do we seek out those who are alone and make sure that there's someone checking on them? You know, what does it mean to be a good human being in our world?
Yes, I wish this is another thing that has no easy answers. Even in England, with a minister of loneliness, they can create structures, but they still can't be a human being. It takes one human being to be another human being to someone else.
And that's you can say that exact same thing in the church context. There are structures. There might be the small group and the Sunday school class, but it takes one human being to be another human being to someone else.
Right. And I think that one way, and it may seem counterintuitive when you think about saying, I need to look around me, and I really need to look. I need to look hard, not just at my pals and my family members, but I need to be able to ask the Lord to give me eyes to see supernaturally beyond, what's right in front of my face. But I would like to suggest that actually we will get those eyes if we first look at our own places of loneliness.
Preach. All right, keep talking here, Michelle. Yes.
If we do that, we will have the eyes that we'll see, I think. And it's unpleasant to have to do that. It's another kind of have a good hard look in the mirror kind of piece of advice. But to acknowledge the places that I'm lonely. I'm more sensitized to loneliness now because of my own illness issues. And I get out there, and I'm because I'm an extrovert, I will figure out some way to get that need met. But we all have that need. Even the deepest introvert that would be happy living in a cave 364 days a year.
Still has to come out for sunshine. Well, and I think, not to put this back on the individual, but I think there is that piece that we do need to pay attention to and work on ourselves. And I literally just this morning said to Mike, one of the things I have learned, and this past year has helped me with it, but I've learned this, I would say in the last 5 years, probably, I have learned to to discern my needs and to work at meeting them, at being the one responsible to have the needs met. Now, not everyone has that skill or has figured that out, and that's part of the puzzle as well, but I think there needs to be better teaching on this, that it is absolutely okay to reach out and say, I need this, or move forward to meet your own needs. You know, you it's that whole thing in marriage, your spouse cannot read your mind.
That's exactly right. And I think a lot of times when we hear the language of ministers of loneliness, and we are ambassadors for Christ, and so we should.
There's the should word.
the killer word.
Yeah.
If there is a killer of true relationship, it is the word should.
Yeah.
Those people, that lady that walked by Mike is not a should. You know, God is pursuing her. And he's pursuing all of us in our places of loneliness if we are willing to stop and take a look at that in ourselves. We will be far more able to create meaningful relationships, whatever that looks like, at whatever level that is.
And there's a trickle down here, because I'm hearing you say that, and in my introverted mind, this is where I'm going. But what if I reach out? What if this woman starts knocking at my door every day? As an introvert, I can't take it. Well, this raises other issues. Well, then you still stay in relationship, but you might have to work on what boundaries look like.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, you know, this extends out the kinds of things that this raises, and it just makes you aware that, oh, I'm an adult. I have to figure all this stuff out. And also makes me sometimes think, oh, where are the deficiencies in my parenting? What have I not passed on to my child? Because I'm just learning.
Oh, my list is so long. Yes. I've got such a long list. But I think, this also comes back to, and it circles back to a word that you used at the beginning, if I'm remembering right, which is the word presence.
Yeah.
You don't have to figure it all out right now.
Right.
But to be present in the moment and to be aware, to recognize I'm lonely or I have this need, I've hurt. You will be able to be present, whether it's a person who has left your church or whether it is a neighbor that seems very isolated and, you know, or someone in the nursing home or a person with a neck tattoo that is working on the shipping dock at Walmart, you know. So,
yep.
We are all that person.
Yeah, I would love to hear from listeners to the podcast about this, how they've engaged, how they might be the one feeling lonely, not sure what to do. I think this would be a great podcast to get some emails on and your thoughts on what we've talked about here today as well. Again, the email address is faithconvo@gmail.com, or you can just go to the website. And there's a contact tab there, a little spot somewhere on there where you can click and it'll shoot an email straight through to me. This is big stuff. I mean, we in some ways have just scratched the surface. We've gone a little deeper with some of it, but I hope it's gotten the thinking juices flowing in people who do listen regularly to the podcast. Michelle, you always have topics. You're great. You always have things to talk about, and I will connect with you again. You sent me a whole range of topics, of which we just tackled a couple of them. So there are always more. But thank you for elevating these two things today, speaking about the church and broader society as well. And just always a joy to have you with us.
It's a joy to be here. And yes, listeners, keep the conversation going.
I love it. You stole my tagline.
I know this. I wrote it down because I was like, these are topics that need
they do.
Additional conversation. Yes. And gosh, I'm hoping that a few of you take a moment or two to tell us where you're at. Not us. Tell Anita where you're at, and maybe she'll share some.
I will
with
share.
You.
Yes, I will, for sure.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, thanks again, Michelle. And as always, as I say in closing, keep the conversation going. You know, you easily could hear that twice, so that's what you got today. All right.